You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 16th of June 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
You know, a few days ago, there was a confrontation between Chinese and Canadian fighter pilots. Of course, you know, Canada's known for their fighter pilots over North Korea enforcing sanctions. Chinese fighter pilots, at least one of them, gave the Canadians the finger such that they got close enough they could see, flipped them off. And in response to that, Ottawa said that that was highly unprofessional and that they were very offended. That's an exact quote. So, you know, World War III is coming.
Well, that is quite suspicious, isn't it? Chinese coming into contacts with the Canadians like that. I mean, normally you would expect them to be a little bit more worried about that, not trying to upset the Canadians or the Americans. But it does seem as if finally the dollar is beginning its collapse, something that we've talked about for quite some time here. And we're going to get into the details of that today. Starting off with the Fed has raised its interest rates to the highest in the last 28 years. The US Federal Reserve warned during the previous raise earlier this year that it planned to continue increasing the interest rate throughout the year to fight historically high inflation in the country that has started to severely affect ordinary people's budgets. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 75 points, bringing its value to between the 1.5 to 1.75% range. This is the third time the Fed has raised rates this year and is the biggest one-time increase in 28 years since 1994. By increasing interest rates and trying to slow down the overheated economy, the Fed is looking to rein in inflation that reached 8.6% year on year in May, continuing its rise compared to April values of 8.3%. We continue to see risks for inflation to the upside. We are highly attentive to risks of high inflation and strongly committed to bringing it down. Since the Fed's May meeting, inflation has again surprised to upside. Our overarching focus is using our tools to bring inflation back down to our 2% goal, in keeping with longer-term inflation, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said. Following the previous decision to raise interest rates, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell warned that it was not the last increase and that the regulator will likely up the rates several times throughout 2022 until inflation starts to drop. The members of the Fed's Open Market Committee have offered different predictions regarding what interest rate will look like by 2023, varying between 2.75% and 4.5%. The Fed raised the rate in March for the first time since December 2018 and after a long period of keeping it extremely low. The regulator even reduced it to 0.025% in 2020 to aid the stagnating economy due to the coronavirus pandemic. Rapid economic restoration and growth that followed in 2021 brought about the first signs of anomalous inflation in November 2021. Similar phenomena were witnessed in other countries as well, including in the UK and the EU. Amid criticism of being unable to deal with the issue, US President Joe Biden routinely blames the Russian special operation in Ukraine and President Vladimir Putin personally for flaming high inflation in the US. So it's going up to 8% there, the inflation in America, and they're having to increase the interest rates. Matt, can you break this down and explain just what's going on here for us, please?
There's so much happening here. It's hard to know where to begin. First thing I'm going to say is that that's a false inflation rate. And I'm surprised that Sputnik took that. But even guys that I respect, like Mike Whitney, have said the same thing. If you calculated inflation the same way it was calculated in 1990. It's something between 15 and 17%. But they have changed the way that they have calculated that so many times, especially in the Clinton administration, that it's simply a false. It used to be the old definition was how to maintain your current standard of living. That's how the inflation rate was understood. Now it's a basket of goods and they track the price. Now the problem there is that they substitute goods all the time. They assume that if something goes up in price, the Americans won't buy it anymore, even if it's a necessity. So it's a nonsense measure. But remember, the way the point system works, it's 0.01%. And they're making believe. You know, initially, I was taken in by this, and I realized it just isn't true. When you have inflation, say, 14 to 15%, back in May, they raised the Fed funds rate to 1%. But if, you know, it's still just a tiny, tiny amount. And what the media is hiding here, is that it's still way below the rate of inflation. Even if you took the notion that this was the inflation rate was correct, it's still below it. It's a public relations, scam. So just for example, and I got this from Whitney, if I loan you $100 at 1% interest, but inflation is running at 8%, how much would you lose $7 a year? And that's exactly what the Fed is doing. The interest rates, in this case, way below the rate of inflation. They lose money on every loan, which is another way of saying the Fed is providing a subsidy to the banks that make up the very – so to themselves. And, of course, the whole thing is absurd. And yet that's not what we're paying on credit card debt. Thank God I don't use those. It's a subsidy. It's a gift. Like, I mean, 18, what's the average credit card rate? You know, 21, 22%, something like that. So everything about this is false. I'm really surprised that Sputnik even uses the phrase overheated economy. Overheated economy is a phrase you usually use when the economy is growing so quickly that they're overprinting money. And that does happen. It's happened in a few places over the years. There's no growth. This whole notion of a recovery is nonsense. No wonder the Fed is just buying stock. They're bailing out mortgage-backed securities all over the place. This is counted as growth. All these financial scams that the Fed and the banks that make it up do, this is all considered growth. If you want to talk about growth, you need to look at the increase of the use of fuel, for example, the increase in freight, air, land, and rail. You know, rising wages. Those are the ways that you can figure whether an economy is growing or not. And none of those things are happening. So most of these are false numbers that have been manipulated over the decades. You know, you take even, you know, you use the way that these figures were calculated, say, between 1980 and 1990. All of these numbers are triple what they're saying in it. But they've manipulated these figures, unemployment, growth, inflation, to such an extent that none of this is real. They think it's real. So the policies, even if the policies were rational they're coming up with, it's based on faulty statistics. And I strongly recommend everyone listening here, shadow statistics, and I've talked about them before. They're a group of people led by John Williams who were part of the Bureau of Labor Statistics in America, in Washington. And in the 90s, the Clinton administration, they quit en masse because they were being told to lie. And they created a pay site, but it's worth it. Shadow statistics is what I go to because they're all professionals to get the real scoop and exactly in detail how they've manipulated these figures. So none of these figures, the so-called headline figures, are real or even remotely accurate.
Well, it's bad enough as it is if the interest rates, what is it, a quarter of the rate of inflation. Well, the Fed has also increased the ability of banks to lend to one another. U.S. stocks stalled on Wednesday after rallying earlier in the week, with the S&P 500 taking the biggest hit in anticipation of the Fed's decision following the end of its monthly meeting. In a move anticipated for weeks, the U.S. Federal Reserve has increased the effective federal funds rate, which governs how much banks can lend to one another, by between 0.5% and 0.75%. It is the single largest increase since 2000 and a sign of how serious the inflation problem really is. The committee decided to raise the target range for the federal funds rate to 0.75% to 1%. and anticipates that ongoing increases in the target range will be appropriate, the central bank's Federal Open Market Committee, or the FOMC, said in a statement. In March, the FOMC raised the interest rate to between 0.25 to 0.50 percentage points. Inflation is much too high, and we understand the hardship it is causing, Fed Chair Jerome Powell told reporters at a press conference, and we are moving expeditiously to bring it back down. Powell said the FOMC anticipates ongoing increases will be appropriate, adding that there is a broad sense on the committee that additional 50 basis point increases should be on the table at several upcoming meetings. He noted that the underlying momentum of the US economy remains strong, despite decreases in the first quarter of 2022. However, he noted the labour market is extremely tight and that wages are rising very quickly. So what is going on here, Matt? What are they just doing? Saying banks can lend to one another, but the money is completely worthless. What is the point of what's being done here? How is this going to improve matters?
Well, it's not. And I know that they don't have any intention. Even Soros, just a few years ago, said the collapse of the dollar is absolutely imminent. But for him to say things like, you know, the underlying momentum is very strong, that's a press release. That's how much value it has. Back when 08, when Lehman Brothers collapsed, Ben Bernanke at the time was the chairman. He dropped rates to zero, but then put the printing press on absolute, you know, pedal to the metal, which means that the Fed is flooding the regime with, I mean, they are the regime, with all of this low-priced money that has, of course, created asset bubbles, that has destroyed the value of the dollar. And I'm telling you, because of these false numbers, because of the overpriced securities, overpriced everything, the tiniest little rate hike can touch off a massive panic. Remember that the number, even if we're talking about accurate figures, the number isn't all that important. What's important is how people, you know, BlackRock, and how are these people, even medium-sized, how are they going to react to it? Do they think that this is the end? I mean, he already said that they're going to keep doing this. So now you have a panic. So you have all these, you know, pennies on the dollar sales, and other shadow lenders, you know, that are equally, they're all overextended to begin with. And so you have this domino effect of defaults, creating, you know, or deepening the already existing financial crisis. So to put it differently, this price bubble that we've been talking about for a long time that the Fed has created, which of course is, you know, the group of private consortium of private banks, with all of this, you know, repressed low rate obsession since the collapse of 08, created things that is so unstable. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time, that any tightening of monetary policy can create a meltdown. And on top of all that, we talked about this before in 2020, you had trillions used to bail out and to support the stock market, buying all their bad securities, all their non-performing loans, stuff like that. And since 08, you haven't had a whole lot of production. So you've had low rates, mass money printing, without any real substantial economic activity other than these financial derivatives. That's automatic inflation. So when you have people like Powell saying that, whatever the cause of this inflation, they're well aware of what the cause is. I don't think they trust their own system. I think this is, you know, Band-Aid measures, and they're collecting their nest egg for when the thing does collapse. They'll be abroad, or they'll have, you know, they'll transfer their dollars into something else. You know, there's a million ways they can protect themselves. So while we have to pay, you know, inflated prices and high rates on credit cards, whatever, these guys are getting subsidized and bailed out. So it really doesn't matter what they do. They live in this bubble ideologically and everything else, now a monopoly, and have already taken care of what's going to happen when it does collapse. Because the regime has already said this. I mean, Soros said it. A whole bunch of billionaires have said it. So when that happens, when it hits, they're going to be taken care of, but we're going to have absolutely nothing. And that's why we've been saying we have to stock up on things, goods of all kinds, for when this happens. Remember, prices have been going up substantially since the depression of 07 to 09, which is still, you know, we're still living with and deepening. And prices went up then. I was before COVID. I was talking about prices on eggs and basic staples, food staples, going up 15, 17%. That was before COVID. So you have this explosion of prices, an irrational economy, an irrational middle class. I'm telling you, the oil price hikes, they're not going to stop buying their status symbol cars. They don't care. They'll do what they have to do. They're not buying Corollas now. So you have massive debt, unrepayable debt. The debt is higher than the whole GDP of the country. So even if they sold off everything, they still couldn't repay the debt. That means, and when you have rising, powerful economies in the East, there's not much they can do. That has everything to do with this war, by the way, the war on Russia and China. And of course, the ideology that's enforced on people to keep people like us from getting anywhere and suppressing all possible rejections of the Great Reset, which, of course, is a deepening of the New World Order. So I've said it before, but this is just the beginning. Prices have been exploding since 2008, and it's not going to stop. It's actually going to start increasing.
Well, this next bit really interests me, so I want to get you to explain this bit. The Federal Open Market Committee also announced plans to reduce its balance sheet of $9 trillion in government and other debt securities that it has bought up in recent years in an attempt to buttress the economy without further cutting interest rates. The Fed plans to slash that by $95 billion a month, beginning in June. Powell told reporters that the Fed would be reducing securities holdings in a predictable manner, including Treasury securities, Treasury coupon securities, and Treasury bills, and agency mortgage-backed securities. I wish it was that easy for people that have debt at home to just get rid of the debt just like that. Just reduce the balance sheet by $9 trillion. Slash it by $95 billion a month. I mean, how are they going to reduce that debt? What is it? What are they going to do there to get rid of that debt, Matt, do you think?
Well, ultimately, you know, the debt can't be repaid. The whole point of the Great Reset is to take everything that is and is not nailed down and use that as security against the debt that no one can repay. It's not just the state. The household debt is something like $47,000 per family. Again, that's also unrepayable. They're about the ledger debt in the private sector is something like $20 trillion. Of course, you know, unfunded future obligations make it much higher than that, which no one really talks about. That can't be repaid. The only thing, and even this is a Band-Aid solution, is using things like racial violence, as I predicted, things they can't see or understand, like viruses, to destroy to such an extent that they could simply buy up assets and there would be much easier to forgive debt. Ultimately, if you want to reduce the Great Reset to a slogan, it's we'll forgive debt and pretend it isn't there, but we're going to take everything you have and we'll put you on a monthly guaranteed income. That's the Great Reset as a foundation. The problem is this income is going to be denominated in dollars and therefore who knows? If this is going to last. Again, this is all Band-Aid solutions. People are going to buy it. Oh, great. I don't have to do all that. But yeah, you know, I'm not going to be able to buy them. I have to rent my house, whatever it is. Even the concept of a career is being removed. It's the so-called gig economy. People get paid in piecework. That lowers costs for corporations. They don't have to pay benefits or anything else. And they're going to privatize profits. And then they're going to externalize all of their obligations to the state. So it's going to be a double and triple subsidy. Again, this is we're just seeing this developing, and the tight control over people, you know, putting chips in clothing, putting chips in pills. This is just the last meeting of the World Economic Forum last month or 2 months ago. We're talking about this openly. This is not a secret anymore. And this way, they can keep track of every penny that anyone spends, and things like pieces of paper like the U.S. Constitution have no bearing on this. They had no idea this stuff would ever exist, and now it's just a piece of paper, especially since after COVID, the president and governors just said we can do whatever we want, and people are now used to that. So none of that stuff is going to matter. And so this is how, at least for the short, maybe the medium term, this is how they're going to handle this. And people who have no clue about how economics works, international economics, the value of dollar, these technical things, are going to go along with it because they don't know what any other option is. I just want to give one example. My wife sent me a link of an Amish organic food producing It's actually a pretty big institution. I think it's in Pennsylvania. That was because they didn't use FDA-approved slaughterhouses, has been shut down with a $250,000 fine because they do it their own way there, much easier, much more cheaply. They're now being shut down. Anyone who's going to provide goods apart from the regime or independently of the regime is going to be completely destroyed. That was a huge shock, and it's a huge shock to your organic farms and everything else going after the Amish, who have been, you know, depression-proof since their foundation in this country. They're all being shut down, not to mention all the other normal food processors out there. So all of this is being artificially created, but that's just an insurance policy. They're shutting down anybody who has an alternative method. And what options we're going to be left with over the next few years is anyone's guess.
So that's how they're going to slash the debt, is just by repossessing everything and then renting it back to everyone, as it says in the Great Reset. Well, the aggressive rate hike comes as inflation, already hitting a 40-year high earlier this year, has continued to increase. According to numbers released in mid-April by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the price of consumer goods, tracked by the Consumer Price Index, increased by 8.5% over the previous 12-month period. A number of factors have driven the dollar's value downwards, including shortages and speculation caused by manufacturing and shipping interruptions due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the US boycott of Russian petroleum products in retaliation for Russia's special operation in Ukraine, which caused gasoline prices to spike. Prices in global markets continued to climb on Wednesday as the European Union discussed its own proposed ban on Russian imports, which supply nearly half of the bloc's energy needs. Brent crude, the international price benchmark for crude oil, increased by 4.47% on Wednesday, hitting $109.4 per barrel. Natural gas prices also rose by 4% to $8.35 per million British thermal units. For petroleum, that is a 57% increase from a year ago, while for natural gas, the increase is nearly 300%, according to the Wall Street Journal. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has long tolerated inflation as the price of the US economic recovery from the catastrophic crash that heralded the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, when much of the globe paused trade for several weeks and the US economy contracted by 20%. That tolerance ended in March 2022, when the Fed increased interest rates by 0.25 percentage points in response to record-level inflation. The central bank is expected to continue increasing interest rates to at least 2.7% by the end of the year in an effort to reduce inflation to below 2% per year. Volatility is likely to continue. Rate hikes have just begun. Inflation looks sticky. Many geopolitical issues have no obvious off-ramp, and midterm election rhetoric is just ramping up, Ross Mayfield, an investment strategy analyst at Baird, told clients earlier this week, according to CNBC. Though the domestic economy has been resilient, corporate earnings are hanging tough, and the US consumer continues to spend. Instability driven by inflation and rates should continue in the near term. Have we seen this year's market low? Possibly not. And I think it's quite serious here. The geopolitical issues have no obvious off-ramp. I mean, if they seriously wanted to do something about this, they would be trying to put a stop to what is happening in the Ukraine rather than encouraging it. Matt, what are your thoughts on what is being said here?
Again, so many of these numbers, possibly with the contraction number and COVID, are just speculation. Again, based on faulty, like the Consumer Price Index, based on faulty methods designed to make things look better than they are. The very fact that the financial newspapers and journals are not allowed to use the word depression in an economic sense, even going so far as to call it the Great Recession, refusing to use that term because of the emotional impact that term has, means that the regime, of course, is aware that a lot of this is nonsense. What strikes me, and as always no one is mentioning, is that, you know, mentioning Canada, Mexico, the U.S., Canada are self-sufficient in everything. There is no need. I mean, I said this last time. The state of Nebraska could feed the planet if they all were planting to capacity. There's always been a glut of food. This is the nature of globalization, because now globalization creates dependency. All of a sudden, these global markets, if there's any damage to that infrastructure, everyone's in trouble. Oh my God, we're importing flowers from Ecuador. Like we can't grow our own flowers. This is this ridiculous policy. The U.S. is self-sufficient in oil. It's certainly self-sufficient in food. it's self-sufficient in natural resources. But this is because, you know, stealing foreign markets and taking over local businesses abroad is a huge, you know, part of the profit motive. That's why this system came into existence, and lowering transaction costs and repressing labor, forcible economic restructuring of the third world that doesn't play along, warfare, all this kind of thing. You know, just I forget, a couple days ago, Saudi Arabia decided to try to please the Americans. Remember, Aramco is largely an American firm anyway, the oil state oil company. So we're not going to sell, we're not going to deal with Russian natural gas anymore. And also, so what? The only thing that, sorry, to China, not to Russia. We're not going to be dealing with China, although we're not going to sell them oil or natural gas. And China just went, okay, so let's just turn the spigot just a little bit with our pipeline with Russia. And now this just increases the trade between the two countries. These are band-aid, almost childish measures designed to please the regime rather than connect anything. I mean, Russia we'll say here in a minute, has benefited massively from that. Again, American numbers in that regard are make-believe. And no one knows any better, so they can say whatever they please. You know, the people writing for the financial papers are not economists. Macro, they're not any part. They're journalists. They're not experts in this field at all. And, you know, what's going to happen in short terms of oil prices is that the regime, you know, it's not a market, is going to, as this subsides, is going to lower prices a small amount that everyone's going to breathe a sigh of relief, even though they're still twice as much as it was a year ago. Or in 2020, when oil went to negative numbers per barrel, despite it all being still $2 a gallon. Remember, this is all make-believe. This has nothing to do with markets. We live in a planned economy, in a planned state, using faulty numbers, no different than the old Soviet Union. They made up numbers all the time, so let's not get in trouble. It's no different here. And even, like I said, even a tiny interest rate increase is going to create a domino effect. It's such a gargantuan price bubble. And Powell is very skittish about this. That's why he's, you know, using the points, 0.01%. He doesn't really know who the struggling players are or where they might be. So you just take one investment bank, a big one, with, you know, not making a profit, who is really struggling, drowning. If they go belly up after an interest rate hike, no matter how small, that bank, of course, is going to take down 1,000 others that are dependent on them. That's the nature. This is a perverse, this grossly entangled market, as Mark Whitney said. This web of debt stretches across the entire system. Even the strongest players, you know, the regime can't keep bailing them out and wonder why inflation is increasing. Now, if there were actual production, if the people were actually making things, if factories were functioning, if farmers were allowed to farm, if there were alternatives in food and medicine, it would be a different story. Then, you know, if the economy is growing, actually literally growing with making things, then this all could be weathered, which is what's going on in Russia and China. They're making things. They're producing value. So it really doesn't matter. There's no value being produced in the United States. The so-called growth numbers are just financial derivatives for the most part, overwhelmingly so, especially after COVID. And that's why there's going to be a moment, I think, there's going to be a very sudden spike in inflation, because it's bad enough to print money like this, but it makes it 1,000 times worse when there's nothing for it to go to. No one's making anything. Financial derivatives are parasitic on actual production, which is being done abroad. And this kind of web of debt, this web of fraud, I think is way too much for the average American to grasp.
Well, while the West is pressing the self-destruct button, the East seems to be doing quite well. Russia and China are continuing to eliminate the US dollar from mutual trade, as monthly volumes on the exchange of ruble and yuan have reportedly soared 1,067% to nearly $4 billion over the past 3 months. According to Bloomberg calculations, some 25.91 billion yuan, or $3.9 billion, have been exchanged for rubles on the Moscow spot market so far in May, marking a 12-fold surge versus the volumes recorded in February when Russia launched its military operation in Ukraine. The spike coincides with a rally in the ruble to a five-year high against the yuan and the US dollar. Meanwhile, a volume in the dollar-ruble pairing reportedly dropped to the lowest level in a decade. The ruble rallied 118% against the greenback between early March and late May, even as most traders deserted the pair amidst capital controls and forced dollar sales. The main players in the yuan ruble market are corporations and banks, but there is also a growing interest from retail investors, a currency and rates strategist at Sberbank CIB, Yuri Popov, told the agency. The volume on the Moscow's exchange's spot market has surged. This is due to sanctions concerns, as well as the intentions of Russia and China to encourage the usage of national currencies in bilateral trade, he added. The mass exodus of international brands from the sanctions-hit country have reportedly forced Russian businesses to turn to Chinese goods to replace Western imports. Meanwhile, the Chinese yuan may gain fresh impetus for internationalization just when growing tensions between Washington and Beijing are slowing that process. So all these sanctions on Russia are doing are causing Russia to buy everything from China. So Russia and China are benefiting while in the West inflation goes through the roof. What do you make of what they have to say here, Matt?
Well, you know, this has been a huge issue for me for 15 years at least. We've talking about it just ad nauseum here. Everything I said about the U.S., the Western economies in general, just a minute ago, everything I said there has its mirror image in the Russo-Chinese alliance, which has been, you know, at least 20, 25 years old. I said that the U.S. prints money, or the regime prints money, and has nothing to, you know, sop it up, no real production, and massive debt. That's a nasty, you know, triangle of absurdity. Russia, China, the exact opposite is true. Neither country has debt. They're, in fact, creditor countries. God knows, Ukraine alone couldn't pay its Russian debt back, you know, which is one of the reasons that this is happening there. It was one of the reasons that they provoked warfare and went to international court. They actually produced things. So they could print money all they want. It's not going to matter. They also have most of the world's gold right now. The U.S. has pieces of paper that say gold on them. And of course, the state is heavily involved. So this profit motive, empire building profit motive, doesn't exist to the extent they realize that Russia, China are completely self-sufficient in pretty much everything. They have a whole different grid now, whether it be, you know, the use of credit cards. Because Russia has been building up these surpluses year after year after year, they have a huge amount of money just sitting there to cushion anything that's going on. U.S. doesn't say there's no savings. There's no cushions at all, no financial cushions whatsoever. And one of my predictions, I've said this before, is that you're going to have medium-sized, maybe some big players looking to become a part of this alliance. They'll have to do it secretly, but they can do that because they don't trust their own economy. No one trusts the dollar. All of this kind of thing is everything that's happening is Russia and China. You know, it's not going to be military. They're going to try to use what little economic clout they have, and it does nothing but benefit them. This BlackRock, so-called Biden administration, called yet another assembly of the Americas, and most of the South American countries aren't going. This is the first time you've had a mass boycott, including Brazil, of this. And part of the reason is that they've gotten much better deals from the Chinese and to a lesser extent the Russians in places like Venezuela and Nicaragua than they could ever get from the Americas. They're reducing their dependency on the U.S. They used to be 100% dependent on the U.S. But with the rise of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, of course, BRICS includes Brazil, their trade is wildly diversifying. Finally, for the first time, they can give the finger, a la Chinese fighter pilots, to the U.S. And, of course, there's really not much you can do. This is the first time they called this, I forget the exact name, the Alliance of the Americas, whatever it is, and no one wants to show. This is a huge game changer because they used to be dependent. Now they're not. This is why there's threats of warfare every day against either Russia or China at the same time, believe it or not. Because this is it. The U.S. can't throw its weight around. It has no weight to throw.
Well, the Russian ruble is surging in value. The Russian ruble set another multi-year high against both the U.S. dollar and the euro 2 weeks back, even as the central bank loosens capital controls. The ruble was trading below 58 to the euro, its strongest level since May 2015, and below 56 against the dollar, its strongest since February 2018. The quotes are according to the Moscow exchange data as of 07:15 GMT on that day. The Russian currency gave up some of the gains later in the session. The ruble continued to strengthen even as the central bank loosens the capital controls initiated in March to protect it from Western sanctions. On Monday, ahead of a week's tax payment deadline for exporters, the Russian regulator relaxed its requirements for the mandatory sale of hard currency earnings. Exporters now must sell just 50% of their proceeds, down from the previous 80%. These sales were seen as one of the main factors behind the strengthening of the currency. Additionally, the central bank is expected to further lower its key interest rate at an extraordinary policy meeting on Thursday. The currency received a boost this week as more European companies appeared to be complying with Moscow's demand that natural gas imports be paid for in rubles. Experts note that capital controls, collapsing imports, and surging energy prices have made the Russian currency about 25% stronger than before the Ukraine-related sanctions. Bloomberg recently named the ruble the world's best-performing currency this year. However, some Western analysts have claimed that the capital controls imposed by the central bank are keeping the ruble's official exchange artificially high. And as I say, that comes from a couple of weeks back. Matt, do you know what's happening with the ruble now? This article here we're using is a couple of weeks old.
Yeah, and this is continuing. Can you imagine being so neurotic that you project the artificial nature of the currency onto Russia? That's all they're doing here. I just explained why the currency is the way it is. Why would Russia now be slowly dismantling its defenses against sanctions? Well, the article already says it, because European countries are following along. They can't trust the U.S. They can't trust the dollar anymore. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. No one wants to listen to the U.S. anymore. No one wants to go bankrupt because of American obsessions of not being an empire anymore. And Russia now can afford it. These sanctions have failed in every way that anything can fail. And that's why the ruble is increasing. It is so well cushioned. And of course, I love all these anonymous analysts. I don't know who these idiots are, but they certainly are doing a lot of neurotic projection onto who they think their enemy is. It just doesn't matter. There is no weight for the U.S. to throw around.
Well, the ruble's increased by 25%, noted by Bloomberg as the world's best performing currency this year. So what's happening with the dollar? The globe's top reserve currencies, the US dollar and the euro, have become toxic for Russia, Finance Minister Anton Sulinov said on Friday. The American and European currencies are toxic for us. What should we do with them? He asked while speaking to students at a university in Moscow. What do we need them for? That is, we are selling our own wealth, gas, while getting candy wrappers, toxic candy wrappers. Who needs them? Sulinov continued. The comparison comes from a popular children's game in the Soviet Union in which kids would collect gum and candy wrappers. Different wrappers would have different values according to their rarity. For instance, an American gum wrapper would be more valuable because it wasn't sold in the country. But in reality, of course, they were worthless. Sulinov referred to Russia's current inability to rely on either the euro or the dollar, which according to the Russian government were both compromised after the US and the EU placed sanctions on Russia, effectively depriving the country of the ability to safely conduct transactions in these currencies. Amid the sanctions pressure, Russia has been putting significant effort into supporting and boosting the use of the national currency, the ruble. In order to be able to continue international transactions, for instance, in late March, Russian President Vladimir Putin introduced a new ruble-based payment scheme for Russian gas exports and hinted at the possibility that other commodities may soon have to be paid for in a similar fashion. Some European countries agreed to switch to ruble payments, while those who refused, such as Bulgaria, Finland, and Poland, have already seen their deliveries cut off by Russian gas exporter Gazprom. The switch to ruble payments for gas, in tandem with capital controls earlier introduced by the central bank, have been cited as key factors behind the ruble's recent strong rally. The local currency reached multiple year highs against both the euro and the dollar this month, and many analysts expect the rally to continue. Commenting on the impact of sanctions earlier this month, Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin said that the euro and the dollar are increasingly being used as instruments of political blackmail against Moscow, noting that de-dollarization and de-euroization in the Russian economy remains a priority in the foreseeable future. And Russia does have the St. Petersburg Economic Forum on at the moment, and I have heard people there talking about what a positive effect these sanctions have had on Russia. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, not being able to use the dollar, the euro, which are not safe currencies, that's the financial equivalent of Putin throwing Pornhub and McDonald's out of the country. It's not exactly a negative. It's a positive, and it makes Russia more self-reliant and healthier. So that's the financial equivalent of that.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.